This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so the Tigers are wrapping up spring training. Just a couple more games left before the opener on Thursday at Los Angeles. And, you know, watching as much as I can during spring training and following the box scores and all that, I'm intrigued by the rotation, how good it looks.
Yeah.
On paper. And also, I mean, the fact they bring back Tarik Skubal, he's the best pitcher in baseball, so that's great. Bringing Flaherty back is just a coup for what they were able to do. Unbelievable. You trade them last year, you get assets in return, and then you're able to do the unthinkable. We always talk about it. Why don't you just trade the guy and bring him back in free agency? Never happens.
Right.
And now it happened. And you get Jack Flaherty back. Reese Olson, hopefully healthy for a full season here. He's a solid number three. And then the two guys that made the rotation out of spring training and deserved it, Casey Mize and Jackson Job, a couple of former first-round picks. And, of course, Casey Mize was 1-1. And deserves it. Casey Mize had a fantastic spring.
Yeah, hopefully it can continue.
Yeah, that'd be great if he can stay healthy.
Because, yeah, as intrigued and as optimistic as we are about the pitching, and rightfully so, doing what you did, Gator, and looking at, you know, some spring training baseball and looking at the box scores, this could be one of the best rotations they've had in a long time. And it'd be, you know, since the Verlander, Sanchez, Scherzer, that team, right? Pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. This could be the worst fielding team I've ever seen assembled, though. Colt Keith does not look, it's first year doing a work in progress. Torres is not a very good
over to first base.
Right. Torres is not a really good second baseman. Javi, we know what he is and what he isn't. I mean, he's actually been playing trend but third. Sweeney's good, but Javi's probably, and that's a whole different discussion.
Who knows who gets the more starts at right. Short? I mean, it's going to be dependent on if Javi can hit or not.
Well, third base, it's basically going to be a butcher shop. The outfield, except for Riley Green, I mean, you have Torque's going to be playing right field, it looks like, for part of the time, and when Kerry Carpenter, when they platoon that. I think that's why they got Margot, because he at least can field. Because Jahan, he can't field anything. We saw that yesterday to a certain extent.
Well,
they are awful defensively.
It's not a good defensive team at all. No, they have Jake Rogers and they have Riley Green.
Yeah,
that's it right now to start the season. Now, you get a month into the season, you get Parker Meadows back, who might be the best defensive center fielder in baseball.
Hopefully. I mean, well, you set the alarm. When's his nerve going to wake up?
Well, it's he's doing more every day, I guess.
Know,
so
I know.
I'm just saying.
I'm just frustrated.
I know, but again, before anything's happened, this is like it's my whole beef about people bitching about a bullpen arm that has yet to throw a pitch, and you're right. Booing him already.
Yeah.
But same thing with Javi Baez. No need to boo Javi yet until he shows up this year and he's bad.
Right.
If he's bad,
I get it.
Let him have it. But as far as the defense on paper is concerned, no, it doesn't look very good. I can't imagine that Torkelson's going to be playing many games in right field. I don't think that's going to happen all that often. In fact, probably very infrequently, and maybe just a few innings if he comes in the game late as a replacement. He's going to be your DH. Mm-hmm. When Carpenter is not. I don't think he's your right fielder when Carpenter is your DH. But that remains to be seen. Again, shortstop, I would expect it's going to be Trey Sweeney over Javi at some point. But Javi can start the season there, that's fine. And look, after a game or two, even if it's after a game or two, if you think he's way outmatched and can't do it anymore, then go ahead and throw Sweeney in there. He looks solid. Third base is a problem. It was a problem in the offseason. They tried to address it. They thought they had a deal done. And then a half an hour later, he signs with Boston. We know what happened there. And then you have the Vierling injury. And that hurts. And then Chase Young can't hit in spring training.
Right.
And not that he was a great fielder anyway. Third base is a problem. And it continues to be. And that's a big concern for this team right now because the options, what, Zach McKinstry going to play third base, which he probably will get plenty of reps there. I don't know if Jamai Jones is going to make this roster. He was a guy that had played some third base, though not extraordinarily well.
I would rather him on the roster than that's why I don't understand the whole Margot thing. Let him play outfield.
Yeah, I'm not sure about this whole Margot situation either. I mean, it's another capable outfielder, but it's not like he does a whole lot with his bat. Yes, he hits lefties, but he doesn't hit lefties. It's not great. I think his OPS is like 713 against lefties.
It's 626 overall. But
it's 713 against lefties. That's average.
He had a negative WAR last year.
So, yeah, and like I'm not a big fan of the WAR stat, but he's clearly an extra outfielder on the roster. But because of the situation, he might play more often than you expect him to begin the season. I would imagine that Riley Green will start the year in center field and quickly move over to left field as soon as Parker Meadows comes back.
I don't think
Hinch doesn't want to play him there.
Right, that's why I don't think he will, because they can't take a chance on him getting hurt playing center field.
I think you'll see a lot of Riley in center. I think you might see some Margot as well, but I think you'll see a lot of Riley to start off with because that's the best option. I mean, he's the second best center fielder on the team behind Parker Meadows, who's out. But I came across this, and this is sobering and interesting at the same time. Jim Bowden writes for The Athletic,
yeah.
former general manager. And he has come out and ranked all 30 teams based on the roster. Have you seen this?
Their opening day lineups?
No, just the roster.
Oh.
Ranking all 30 Major League opening day lineups. Yeah, I guess it's lineups. Yeah. Have you looked at this or not?
No, I saw the headline and didn't do it yet.
So, first, should not come as any surprise, the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by the Braves. Then they get to the American League, and you get the Rangers, and then it's back to the National League with the Mets and Diamondbacks and Phillies and Padres. Boston comes in at number 8. So the American League has two of the top 8. And the National League is dominant here with 7 of the top 10. Baltimore comes in at 10, another American League team. But as I continue to go down this list.
Does that include pitching?
It says lineups. Okay. So I think it just means the batting lineup. Baltimore 10. The Yankees are 11. Astros at 12. Kansas City at 13. Toronto at 14. Minnesota at 15. Cubs at 16. Guardians at 17. That's 1, 2, 3 American League teams with a better lineup than
American
the Tigers.
Central teams.
Yes, just the central teams. Right, thank you. Cincinnati's at 18. The Nationals are at 19. Athletics at 20. Seattle at 21. The Angels at 22. The Giants at 23. And coming in at number 24... our Motor City Kitties, the Detroit Tigers. It says the Tigers improved their offense on the right side of the infield by signing former Yankee Gleyber Torres to play second base and moving Colt Keith from second to first. The Tigers' offense is led by left fielder Riley Green and right fielder Kerry Carpenter. Detroit tried to land third baseman Bregman in free agency, offering him the most years and dollars, but he opted to sign with the Red Sox instead. There are more questions than answers at the bottom of their lineup, which is why they're ranked this low. So we went through the defensive lineup you can throw out there, and it's bad.
Yeah.
Offensively, as a lineup, should they be better offensively by adding Torres, hopefully having a full season of guys like Kerry Carpenter and Riley Green that they could be healthy enough, although we were kind of counting on Parker Meadows to be there too, but who knows what Parker Meadows is going to be like or how long it's going to take him to get up to speed. But this tells me
you think maybe Colt Keith will be better offensively.
I think he'll be better offensively, and you'll get more out of Torres than you got out of Keith last year.
And you
I agree with that part.
You might get more out of Torque this year than you got out of Torque last
year. Well, that's
the
key.
Maybe
that to me is the key right there. It's what is Torkelson? because he should make this roster as a DH, and he has swung the bat quite well this spring. But that's happened before where guys have big springs and then the season starts and you're completely lost and who knows what happens. I'm hopeful that he can be better, but I'm not counting on it. To me, Spencer Torkelson is the key to this offense. Because the other guys, I expect them to be either where they were at or better. Some guys, maybe not so much, but I'm not counting on Zach McKinstry's of the world. I'm not counting on the Wenzel Perez's of the world. I'm counting on Riley Green. I'm counting on Kerry Carpenter. I'm counting on Torres. I'm counting on Keith. But if Spencer Torkelson ends up being an above-average bat, that can really help this lineup out a ton.
Yeah, I think, especially early on, we're looking at a very similar team that we had last year, where it's going to be pitching dominant, and they're not going to be able to hit their way out of a paper bag for most of their players. Unfortunately, I'm pessimistic about that, and until something changes, I'll still be pessimistic.
Yeah, I'm certainly not optimistic, but every season it starts with a clean slate, but I'm not clean slate like bright-eyed and, oh, here we go.
No, right.
It's a clean slate and let's see what you have.
Yeah.
That's where it is.
I mean, you look at the three tenants, okay? Pitching, yeah. Offense, defense, Going into the season. Right.
248-539-9797 is the telephone number. The Tigers kind of ramp things up here, the final push going into the start of the regular season. The rotation is set. Casey Mize and Jackson Job are in the rotation. Jackson Job made the club out of spring training. Some people thought that wasn't going to be the case. There he is. He's made this club. But they still lack offense. They bring in Manuel Margot and doesn't really, you know, raise the flag at all here for anybody. We're not saluting that move just yet. How do you feel, Tiger fans? We'll talk about it next year. 97.1 The Ticket. Well, you got good news and bad news to talk about on the show today. The good news is the NCAA tournament reaching the Sweet 16. Both Michigan and Michigan State have done so.
Awesome.
Helping to represent the Big Ten. The SEC has seven teams in the Sweet 16. The Big Ten is what, four teams in the Big Ten?
Four out of eight. Both power conferences, 50%.
What we don't have are any Cinderellas.
Mm-hmm.
None of those. None of the smaller conferences in their conference champions advanced. The closest you got is a 10 seed that advanced, but I mean, it's the highest paid team in the country, probably.
Yeah, probably.
So that doesn't really count as being a Cinderella story at this point. And then we've got, what are Spartan fans thinking about it? What are Michigan fans thinking about it? Both teams are playing Friday night. Michigan State, the earlier game of the two, taking on Ole Miss. And Michigan will take on number one seed Auburn, which creates a dilemma, I think, for some Spartan fans of the rooting interest. Of course, you want Michigan State to handle their business. And if they do, okay, then who do you want to play? You want to take on Michigan, who's a five seed, or do you want to take on the one seed, which is Auburn, which would mean that your biggest rival has just been knocked out of the tournament?
Look, I believe, and it's call me a wuss, whatever, for the Spartans, I want the easiest path to the Final Four possible. I mean, they're all going to be tough games no matter who you play anyway. I get that, but I know Michigan's played well lately, but Michigan State matches up better with them than probably most teams because of the depth of their big guys, meaning Michigan State's. And, you know, I think Auburn's a lot more athletic than Michigan. Give me the Wolverines. And look, granted, my rivalry is not the same as your rivalry. I like both, but you know the deal for the two sports with me. So I'm not the average Spartan diehard. I mean, they're my second favorite college basketball team besides American.
American.
And they pooped the bed the other night. But whatever.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Well, and now with Auburn, I guess the thing is, like, if you're looking at this, you could be objective on this and just say, Michigan's playing better than Auburn is right now. Like, if you had to reseed everything and do it based on how teams have played over the last couple weeks, Michigan would be seeded over Auburn. Auburn lost three of their last four games.
With the
only win, with the win in that group came over Ole Miss in a narrow win by 5 points. Michigan knocked off three real tough teams in the Big Ten to win the Big Ten tournament, and then have gone out and won the last two games here in the NCAA tournament. Now, to be fair, Auburn has won their two games in the NCAA tournament as well. But losing three out of four down the stretch had everybody questioning who they are. I think whether it's U of M or it's Auburn, just being objective, both teams are playing, you know, Michigan's playing better than Auburn right now. It's hard to say.
I don't know. I still think Auburn's a better team. They're obviously the number one. They're the number one seed in the tournament.
This is true. This is true. But, you know, what have you done for me lately is I mean, I don't care so much what teams did in November and December. I really don't care. You know, great. You started off, they were 7-0, and then they end up going, I think, 21-1 to start the season. And then they have this losing streak at the end, or not even, it's a stretch, I should say, losing three of the last four of the regular season. I can look at it that way and say both teams are pretty good. But because the rivalry is involved with me being a Spartan,
right? I get it to a certain extent.
I want Michigan to lose every single game they play. And so, do I want the Auburn smoke? Sure. To get to the NCAA championship, you got to beat good teams.
Okay, so
this is where you start playing.
Let me turn the table. If for some reason, I pray it doesn't happen, but if Michigan State would lose to get to the Final Four, would you rather them lose to Auburn or lose to Michigan?
Well, you'd rather lose to Auburn. You don't want to lose to your rival.
Exactly. So, boom.
So what? Go.
So you're talking about how much the glee you'd have from beating Michigan. You know how coaches say losses hurt more than wins?
Well, that's the downside of yeah, of course, if you were to lose, you don't want to lose to Michigan, but I'm not afraid to play Michigan.
No, like, you shouldn't be afraid to play Michigan.
If Michigan State wins on Friday night and faces off against Michigan on Sunday afternoon,
they'll be favored. They should.
I'll love it.
Yes.
Let's go.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And from a basketball perspective, in my opinion, it'll be an easier path to San Antonio.
I'm just curious, because I don't think Michigan State, the more I talk about this and the texts I've gotten from friends and stuff that are Spartans, we're all kind of in the same page. Like,
I know they
don't want to see Michigan play because we want them to lose. Not because we want to beat them again. That's a bonus. But we'd rather see them lose because F Michigan. That's the way Spartan fans feel about it.
I understand that. I think it's being short-sighted to a certain extent.
Well, because we're in the Sweet 16, I really think that the games are close here anyway.
Yeah,
I guess because Michigan is playing very well, too. But Auburn, and maybe I'm also biased on this, and Ken can attest to this. I mean, Doug basically said that Auburn's done.
Oh, really?
It's over. No chance.
Pushovers.
That's the easy street right
there. Yeah, he said, before this whole thing began, Doug said, you want to be in Auburn's region, right? They're the weakest of the one seeds.
Can't lose to Auburn.
Right.
That's the one seed you want.
That's the one seed you want to play. So we want it because Doug said so.
Doug knows best.
So that's the good side of sports today. Talking about the NCAA tournament. It's kind of fun here and have both teams involved all week long. There's going to be a lot of trash talking going on. And, you know, hopefully will it end up with a matchup to see who gets to the Final Four between Michigan and Michigan State? We'll see. We'll see if it gets there. But the downside is what we've also been talking about. Unfortunately, the addition the Tigers made, it's not going to, you know, make anybody raise an eyebrow and go, oh, look at that, you know, bringing in Manuel Margot. It's nothing special. Knowing that Parker Meadows is not going to play for probably the first month of the season, that sucks. That sucks because the nerve has not woken up completely just yet. Could happen any moment now, but it hasn't happened yet. And who knows how long Vierling's going to be out, and the options they have at third base just leave a lot to be desired. It's unfortunate that Jace Young just didn't hit at all in spring training. Yeah, I wonder if somebody like Kevin McGonigal is on a fast track. Are they going to have him play games in the minors at third base because, you know, he can hit?
He hit a home run off Aaron Nola yesterday.
He did. Smoked it over the wall in right field. But that's the Tigers situation. And then, of course, there's the Red Wings. which is just so disheartening to see it happen again. For a third straight year in March, the team has just failed to show a pulse.
March sadness. Last 3 years, 39 games in the month of March. And I thank Dan Miller for this stat on Fox 2 Sportsworks. I was on yesterday with Caputo. 39 games in March. So that's a possible 78 points. They've come up with 23 points. 8 regulation wins.
Yeah, not good enough. And this team is 5 points out of the second wild card spot. They're competing with like 6 teams for that second spot. And the last 13 games in the season, it's going to take 9 or 10 wins for the Red Wings to get there in the postseason. Not very realistic. We'll see. They play tonight at Utah. Hopefully Ken Cal finds the right bus to get on. Those that missed the show earlier, Ken Cal got on the Cleveland Cavaliers bus because Cleveland was playing Utah last night. He was heading to the arena to go watch practice, and he got on the wrong bus. hopefully Kenny will be there for tonight's game against Utah. The other good news, again, continues to center around basketball. The Detroit Pistons continue to win, and they got the job done last night in a game where they didn't have Cade Cunningham. They didn't have Tim Hardaway Jr. And of course, New Orleans didn't have some big players as well.
Zion and Trey Murphy.
Right.
And DeJounte Murray, right?
And keep in mind that the Pistons also still continue to play without Jaden Ivey. But they got the job done. They gave up a lot of points, which is not the Pistons' way.
No, they were New Orleans. I was at that game. New Orleans was shooting a lot of unbelievable threes. They were shooting like 53% from three.
Yeah. It was. I looked at these stats at some point in the fourth quarter yesterday. I was looking at the stats on the phone, and the Pistons were shooting like 53% as a team. Like, that's really good. Why are they losing? Why are they struggling? And I look over and I say, oh, because New Orleans is shooting like 57% from the field.
C.J. McCollum had like 40.
Just crazy. But they will outlast them because of another bright player on this team that we're going to talk about next and get excited. I think there's reason to get excited. We mentioned him a lot on this show, but he had quite the fourth quarter yesterday. We'll talk about it next year. 97.1, The Ticket. All right, so I mentioned the Pistons were winners yesterday over New Orleans, which you would expect. But, I mean, Pistons played without Cade Cunningham, without Tim Hardaway Jr., and New Orleans played without Zion, without some other players too. So just kind of one of these strange games you see at this point in the season because it's the NBA and it's what they do. But
sellout crowd, it was packed yesterday afternoon.
You see, this is a nice thing because I went to a couple games within the last couple weeks, and the crowd, I went to the Boston game, and it wasn't a jam-packed crowd like I thought it was going to be. It was a loud crowd, and there were some Celtic fans, which I did not like to see, but fortunately the Pistons pounded them by 20. That was great. And then I went to, it may have been the first Washington game, and they destroyed Washington, and the crowd wasn't much there either, which I wouldn't expect.
Right.
Washington's god awful. And then I had heard as somebody, I don't know if it was during the radio broadcast or maybe in their TV broadcast, and I think it was the TV broadcast, and George Blaha was selling, you know, future games and saying that, you know, get your tickets now because they're going fast before the playoffs. And that he was told that most of the games are getting close to sellouts for the rest of the season, which I thought, okay, that's great to hear. You went yesterday,
and it was pretty damn close,
and it was packed. So that's good to hear for the Pistons.
They got San Antonio tomorrow, and then Cleveland on Friday, I think.
Yes. So San Antonio should be a win, and then you got a showdown with Cleveland, and the Pistons trying to keep pace with what's going on with Indiana, what's going on with Milwaukee. They're within 2 games of both of those teams. But they get the win yesterday. And in no small part because of what happened in the fourth quarter. They end up winning at 136 to 130. And Ron Holland comes out and has a game. Plays 36 minutes in the game, which I think is a career high. Tied a career high with 26 points. 14 of those came in the fourth quarter. 10 of 14 shooting for the game, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, and the 26 points. He looked great. And there are things about Ron Holland's game, every time that I see him play, there's like something else he does. I'm like, ooh, if he does this a lot, this guy could be a guy that fills up the stat sheet every night in the future. Not happening right now, but had a really nice game yesterday. But he is so quick and very athletic. He and Asar Thompson are really nice to see playing out there because they both do similar things. Asar is at a higher level right now because he's got more experience playing it than Ron Holland does.
Not that much more experience because of the injury last year and the sickness. And I think they're both, and maybe Holland even more than Asar, no disrespect, it's made it a term of endearment, they're dogs, especially Holland. He don't back down from anything.
Nope.
I heard somebody make the analogy that he reminded this person, a highly respected basketball person, of Ron Artest when he was a rookie.
Oh.
You know, not his outside shot's not as good, but.
No, he's not. He hit a few yesterday.
He hit a few outside shots yesterday. He's fearless.
That's what I love about him, is that he is fearless. And I love players that are like that. Jaden Ivey is fearless as well. That's why I love Jaden Ivey. And to see Ron Holland doing this and now realizing that, okay, he can get to the hoop. He can get to the rim. And if somebody comes over towards him, once he beats the man who's there and somebody comes over, now he's realizing, I got a guy who's open underneath for an easy dunk.
Yeah.
And he's dishing it off. It really taking his game to a different level. Now, he's not going to be playing 35 minutes a game the rest of the season. But this is a guy that you could see developing or in the future. He's a piece. He's a foundational piece for this team. And it's good to see. Kang, you're a big basketball guy. I'm sure you paid attention to this as well.
You know, JB Bickerstaff has done some incredible things this year, we all know, with the Pistons. But one of the things he's done so well is he's helped develop Ron Holland, but at the same time made him a key piece of why this team is winning this year. It's weird because to balance the two is really tough, right? Because Ron Holland can do more. You just saw it last night. Scored a career high, all that stuff. But what he's asked to do on this team and to see court time is be that dog defender, be the energy guy, right? But still, because he's got to develop an outside shot, he's got to develop his offensive game. But he's trying to do all this at once, and this is a playoff team. That's a really hard line to walk, you know, when you're a young guy in this league, when you're used to being the man, because that's what he was before he got drafted. But on this team, he's got to be a role-type player. And Bickerstaff said this many times after wins and losses this year, is everyone on this team kind of knows their role, and they embrace it. And he's embracing his role. But I know in the back of his mind, he knows, I can do more. And last night, he was an opportunity to do more, and he did it. So the ceiling for Ron Holland is the roof, as Michael Jordan would say. But it is very high, and I can't wait to watch him develop along with the other young guys. But right now, he's asked to do a certain thing, and he does it really well. And remember, he's just a rookie.
Yeah.
Thompson's basically just a rookie, too.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Yeah, because he missed all the time with
the illness,
the blood issue. But he's he only played 9 minutes last night. Had some foul trouble early, and that's why Ron Holland gets all the minutes he got. He got Asar's minutes and made the most of it. And it's just fun to watch to see a team that has young players that are playing at a high level on a team that is also playing at a pretty high level. I mean, the Pistons are one of the best teams in basketball. I think they're the third best team in basketball since the middle of February. They've been outstanding.
Yeah.
So this is cool to see. And it's like, it's contrast to the Red Wings, where the Red Wings are faltering now. And, you know, a month ago, we're praising the Red Wings. And we're seeing, look who's here. Look what's happening with Edvinson has developed in this nice player. And Marco Casper's doing really good things. And
but where are the dogs?
Here's Elmer Soderblom. And right. But yeah, but where are the dogs?
Can Ron Holland skate?
I don't think so. But he's the same height as Elmer Soderblom. They're both 6'8".
That's what's so weird. Soderblom looks so much bigger.
Because you add another 4 inches with the skates or whatever.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
But 248-539-9797 is a telephone number you want to text as well. Just, you know, looking at all the teams here, and there's just the compare and contrast, the Red Wings and the Pistons, it hurts, it stinks with what's going on in the Wings right now. Mm-hmm. They're not out of it yet, but for all intents and purposes, they might be. But the Pistons are totally in it. And the Pistons are fun to watch. I keep telling people, and the friends of mine that aren't basketball fans, we start talking sports, I'm like, you got to start paying attention to the Pistons. it's not the same old with the NBA. Right? No. A friend of mine say over the weekend they haven't watched an NBA game, a full game, in like 4 years. And I said, I understand. It's kind of unwatchable at times if you like the old school approach, and if you don't like just watching three-pointers,
right,
it's not for you. I said, but you got to watch the Pistons because that's not their style. Yeah, they knock down three-point shots. They take three-point shots, but that's not their whole game.
No.
Their game is fast break. It's let's set things up. Cade Cunningham is a budding superstar, and they've got other young players on his team like Asar Thompson and Jalen Duren, and now we're seeing Ronald Holland. He's developed as well, and Malik Beasley is a dead-eye shooter who there's no doubt they're going to bring him back because, A, I think he wants to be back, and, yeah, two, they can pay him.
They're going to have to overpay him a little bit next year, but you know what? So be it.
He deserves the money right now, and when when it gets down to it, it really doesn't matter. I mean, the time is now to make this team as good as it can be, and for a team that is battling possibly to be the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference, that's impressive. Like to see that. 248-539-9797 is a telephone number. You want to talk about the NCAA tournament, the Pistons. We're talking Red Wings as well. We mentioned the Tigers. Even had a Lions question out there. If you're Brad Holmes, look, ESPN suggested Brad Holmes trades up in the draft. Move up from 28 and go get an edge rusher, somebody that you really covet. Perhaps a Mike Green from Marshall was one of the names that he mentioned. Do you want to see the Lions move up or move back in the draft? This is 97.1, The Ticket. Hey, looking to upgrade your outdoor space? Well, Builders First Source has you covered. With 4 Metro Detroit locations, they specialize in top-quality composite decking. Brands that you trust, like Trex or TimberTech or AZEK. So whether you're a DIY enthusiast or maybe you need a certified installer, their expert team will help you build the perfect deck that stands the test of time. Visit one of their locations today in Lapeer, Auburn Hills, Clinton Township, or Shelby Township, and discover why Builders First Source is your go-to for decking. Quality, service, and unbeatable value, that's the Builders First Source promise. Search buildersfirstsource.com. So we had some ticket texts come in. And I did want to get to, there was one more here I wanted to get to, and this is tough to read, but I see it. It must be absolutely humiliating for Steve Yzerman to be the one responsible for bringing the Red Wings out of the Dead Wings era and then putting them right back in it. Now, I don't think he's responsible for that completely.
No.
I think there were some absolute missed drafts that they had at the end of the Ken Holland era. Which obviously that's part of it. And Steve Yzerman, at least to his part, has been more consistent with how he's drafted with the first round picks. And there've been a couple of other picks that beyond the first round that looked like they could develop, but it's everything else. It was late to the party on firing Derek Lalonde. That was a big one. And it's the free agent signings and some of the trades that they've made and then extensions they've given to other players. There's a lot to sift through there that is not very favorable to Steve Yzerman.
No, and if you want to find, search social media, P.K. Subban, who I know some people like, some people don't like, but there's a video of him watching the game was on national television, watching one of the goals from the other night where Justin Hull's in front of the goal and doesn't do anything. They score a goal, and P.K. Subban goes, Justin Hull was soft in Toronto. He's soft in Detroit. That's on you, Stevie Y, basically.
Yeah, and you have Tom McClellan saying after the game the other day, just basically saying the team's not in the right position, not in the right lanes, they're not blocking enough, and guys aren't willing to be putting their body in the line of fire enough. And those are things that were probably working really well when they were winning 7 games in a row. And then winning 7 games in a row a second time under McClellan. This team is not devoid of talent. This team has 2 very talented top lines. The other 2 lines, but those are the lines that those guys have to do those things as
Correct.
Well. And defensively,
they have 2 defensemen, really.
3, I would say.
Sherrod's been okay.
I think Sherrod is okay, and I like Edvinson.
Right.
Edvinson's so young in his career, and
Sider's
Sider. He's great.
Right.
But now without Gustafson, that hurts a little bit.
Because he stinks.
But he was starting to get better. Yeah. That's the thing. And he helps out the power play, but he was starting to get better. Looks like they're going to get Petrie back. I know people have bad opinions about Jeff Petrie.
Oh, that'll take him into the playoffs.
Well, it's not going to take him into the playoffs. And that's not what what would happen. But would he be a better option on defense than, say, Justin Hall? Would you rather see Petrie out there or would you rather see Hall?
Flip a coin. I don't know.
I don't think they're the same player. I think one's clearly better than the other. And Petrie's better offensively,
yes. So yeah, they're not a good place. The season can't end soon enough. That said, they'll go and beat Utah. No, they won't beat Utah because that organization owns them at the end of the season.
This is so sad. True. Happened last year in March. Arizona won the two games. You can't possibly lose to Arizona, the worst team in hockey. They lost both games to Arizona.
And after they played Utah, where are they? They're in Denver next, right, to play Colorado.
Yep. This is not the easy road to make the playoffs.
But if it wasn't good enough for the whole country and the whole North America to watch them play Las Vegas play the Golden Knights Saturday, national television again this Saturday night. I tweeted out yesterday, can the NHL flex this game, get it out of there?
Well,
Red Wings Bruins.
It's two
original six teams that are going freaking nowhere.
Yeah, but they have bigger fan bases than say some of the other teams. But they're also both trying to get the final playoff spots. The Red Wings actually have three games in hand over Boston. Boston's played three more games than the Red Wings this season.
They're below them though, aren't they?
I know they have less points too. Yeah. But they're one of those teams that's in the hunt, which are quickly these teams are finding themselves out of the hunt. As they find themselves farther and farther behind. Montreal is at second spot with 75 points. The Red Wings have 70 points. In between, you got the Rangers with 74, the Islanders with 73, and Columbus with 71. And then behind the Red Wings are Boston and Pittsburgh with 69 each. Philly and Buffalo, they're out.
Yeah.
So it is, look, I don't think this is a playoff team. And I don't think one game is going to spark this team. I don't think a three-game win streak is going to spark this team. They literally have to win 9 or 10 of the last 13 games to have a chance to make the playoffs. It just doesn't look like it's in the cards for them because they're not playing the teams that they need to beat.
Right.
You know, if they had...
Well, they do play Ottawa, and they'll come in here and lose to them, too.
But Ottawa's firmly entrenched in a wild card spot. And Montreal, I think they play once, but that's, again, they're 5 points ahead of them. But that's the team they're chasing.
Even Montreal, the other night, they scored, two or three goals in the third period to force overtime, and they lose, but at least they get a point.
Right, which is something the Red Wings haven't done in forever.
No.
They have not gone to overtime much at all lately. And when they do, they actually win, but they have not gone to overtime and lost just to get the point. Has not happened in forever.
No.
It's very disappointing.
It's hard. It's sad to say. The Red Wings stink right now.
It's 3 years in a row, man. I talked to a beat writer who hadn't been in town in a while, and he was saying, hey, what are people saying on the radio? I'm like, dude, pissed.
Yeah.
He goes, pissed. I'm like, yeah, pissed, because this is the third year in a row we've gone through this. The third March in a row where we've seen this team we think might be good. No, they're not good. You know, here comes Ottawa and the Kachuk to destroy us. What about last year? We got to think they're good? No. They just can't buy a win when they need to against Arizona or need a win against Washington or Philadelphia. Can't do it. They're going to lose. And they miss out by a freaking technicality.
Yeah.
And then this year, they got it, right? They're a good team now. No. Here comes the Four Nations Cup. We're going to take a break. And they come out of the break and they're pathetic.
Right. And one of their best players excels at the Four Nations Cup, and when he comes back, he basically is a shell of himself.
Do you think he's hurt?
It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, everybody's got something going on, but because of the Four Nations Cup, do you think that they maybe got hurt during that?
No.
I'm not using it as an excuse. I'm trying to rationalize why Dylan Larkin doesn't look the same. Playing better now.
Right.
But right after that cup, he was not the same player. Which is really unfortunate. But I don't know. I'm looking forward to watching the game tonight because I'm a hockey guy.
Yeah,
I want to see the game.
Of course I'll watch.
And I'll root them on, and hopefully they can start winning games. But it's been such a kick in the balls type season. It really has.
It's becoming such background noise that I might be more excited to watch the championship of the golf league, Atlanta against New York.
Oh, is that his play?
Cantlay, Horschel, and Thomas for Atlanta against Cameron Young, Ricky Fowler, and Xander Schauffele for New York.
You throw out the records when those two play.
Let me tell you really something. Everything stays the same.
Atlanta versus New York? Was that New York you said?
You got to vote for Atlanta, right? You don't want to have New York win.
No, New York can't win.
Never.
Who's on Atlanta? Ricky Fowler?
No, he's on New York.
Oh.
I like Ricky Fowler. Cantlay, Horschel, and Thomas.
All right, I like JT.
Yeah.
Maybe he's pissed about how things happened yesterday. He had that horrible shot at, was it 18?
Oh, I don't know. I
17 or 18?
He's got to be happy. He's a Crimson Tide guy. Oh, no, they lost, right?
Yeah. Doug hates Atlanta because of Trae Young and Dominique Wilkins. Yeah.
This is true.
He's not pulling for them. He might be pulling New York.
Yeah. So Rico, fresh in from Cleveland, eh?
Yes.
Look at this.
Driving yesterday after Fox 2, listening to a press conference on the flagship of Michigan State basketball, and I hear... Rico Beard, 97, won the ticket. Very good question about Jace Richardson, right? That was yours, I believe?
That was mine.
Yeah. Good question. Yeah, absolutely.
What was your question about Jace Richardson?
I was just asking Jaden Akins, what did they have to say to Jace? Because he had a horrible game. How did they keep him motivated in the game? I mean, he looked like a freshman.
Nobody could shoot in that first half, man, for Michigan State when it came to certainly beyond the arc. But then you could see even like they would move up, not take a three-point shot, and they could not knock down even a 15-foot.
And the threes that they were taking were good shots. They weren't forced. They were good looks.
Right. It looks like it was going in. It does everything but fall.
It's like it was a lid on the rim.
It was. Early on, I'm thinking to myself, New Mexico, here's your chance. You better blow them out.
Right.
Because if you don't, because my thing is, so long as, even if State goes down, so long as they're not down by more than 10 points, they're going to win this game.
Second half, they are an incredible second half basketball team.
And this is exactly what happened. They went out there. I think the play was Akins hitting the three as the shot clock was expiring.
Y'all.
And then they turned around, and Frankie Fiddler, ladies and gentlemen.
He played really well.
Got the and one right afterwards.
My favorite play was the Fears block.
Yes.
Which led to my least favorite play, right, which Holloman had Cohen Carr wide open going down the – and he did, for some reason, he didn't alley-oop it to him.
I think I would imagine every Spartan fan in the crowd is probably standing up with their hands up like, here it comes.
Yeah.
Gator, we were all like
– Where is it?
It was like it was a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
What?
It's over?
Why?
So what time did you get home, like three?
It's a long story.
I just figured it's a 2.5-3 hour drive. Yeah,
because when I went to get in my car,
you didn't have gas in the copter.
It was a flat tire.
On the helicopter?
Yes, on the helicopter. The flat tire, so that took time. The valet people, thank God,
yes,
they bailed me out. They like, we'll change it for you. I'm like, no, seriously, okay. So 3:30.
Wow.
So what's coming on today?
We're going to be talking about a couple things. One is, that is so hypothetical. Do you really want to see this game if Michigan State plays in the Elite Eight? I also have a question. I don't understand why Michigan fans show up to events that have nothing to do with Michigan, head to toe in Michigan gear. I don't understand.
I saw one or two of them I saw at the game.
But it was three.
Oh, three?
It was just like,
okay.
Your team's actually good.
Okay. I would ask Mike this when he comes in. What's worse, that or Pitino wearing the Dracula scarf inside? That was awful.
Okay, he scares me.
I know. He's a vampire. And his son looks younger.
Nosferatu.
Nosferatu, yeah.
And his son looks younger now than he did when he coached in Minnesota.
All right, they're going to check fingernails next here. 97 one ticket.